Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. Savage Nation opening with a little jazz today, because that's the kind of day it is. At least that's the kind of day it should be. Now, if you think I'm going to bash Obama today, I'm not sure, right or wrong. I know that the imposter is at the UN, along with the Iranian Hitler. The Iranian Hitler is calling for the death of Israel, and Obama is continuing to call for the death of America's economy, and here we go again. Now, how in the world could this man, this college lawyer, so far as I know, Obama never appeared before a court to argue a case. I could be mistaken. So not only is he not not a lawyer in the real world, he was some sort of college guy, not even a full professor at that, never held a job. He managed the Harvard Law Review, which, as you know, is fantasy land. It's a prestigious editorship for sure. But it should translate to a job in the real world, which it did for him. It proves the adage that in America, anyone can become president. When I was a little boy growing up in the streets of New York, I was told, Michael, in America, anyone can become president. Looking at Obama, that is true. The question is, does the man have any roots in reality? Now, why would this man, while the economy is falling apart, go to the United Nations and argue for a global warming deal? In other words, Kyoto 2. Cripple America's factories, cripple America's transportation, all in the name of some fantasy put forward by shysters like Al Gore. We had the coldest winter on record. Everybody knows there's no man-made global warming. It's a fantasy and a snowball and an avalanche created by and for special interests on the left who want to control us from the cradle to the grave, and yet there he is in New York. That's his biggest problem. Where are the 3 million jobs that Chairman Obama said he was going to create during the campaign? I haven't seen them. Have you? 3 million new jobs. So now you look on the other hand. You see an economy like ours, which is still faltering. Yeah, blame Bush. I don't care. I blamed Bush for 2 years before he was out of office. I kept saying, you've seen nothing yet. I called Bush a fiscal socialist. So don't put me in the camp of being a Republican lackey. You got the wrong guy if you want to say that about me. Pick somebody else. The golfer was that. He even admitted it. But that's not me. So let's look at the realities of our economy, if you don't mind. I saw an article today from Business Insider by Vincent Fernando and Joe Wiesenthal, which I put up on michaelsavage.com. 10 big companies that are veering toward bankruptcy. You want me to name them without going to the big deal? Because I was shocked to read it. Here are companies that they say are veering toward bankruptcy. Hertz, Textron, Sprint, Nextel, Macy's, Mylan, Goodyear, CBS, Advanced Micro Devices, Las Vegas Sands Hotel, and Interpublic Group. Las Vegas Sands overexpanded and overlevered in the last few years and now has over $10 billion in debt to deal with. Despite jumping 13 times from their March low, Las Vegas Sands shares still face an uphill battle. Conditions in Las Vegas are horrible. Asian expansion isn't enough. And if this lasts too long, then LVS will end up in bankruptcy court looking like it bit off more than it can chew. And in CBS, would you think that the home for Katie Coran would be veering toward bankruptcy? Weak advertising and falling license fees have sent CBS's earnings off a cliff in 2009. If they remain depressed for too long, the company could have trouble refinancing $3.2 billion worth of debt coming due over the next 5 years. It will really come down to whether or not CBS's earnings collapse is merely cyclical or the result of structural trend whereby traditional TV is dying. So there it is. This is amazing stuff. Goodyear. Demand for Goodyear tires has sunk, and the company is saddled with massive debt and pension obligations. It doesn't help that the United Steelworkers Union prevents the company from proper cost control by forcing factories to stay open. Shareholders have to wonder how much value will be left of Goodyear after bondholders and the union members have their way. So here we are on the road to Eastern Europe. We are on the road to Eastern Europe. Now, at the same time that I've read to you 10 big companies that are veering toward bankruptcy, there's a companion article in the Business Insider, The Amazing Stuff of Roman Abramovich. Roman Abramovich is a Russian oligarch, one of the richest men on earth, if not the. And Roman lost more money last year than most billionaires can ever imagine having. He lost $20 billion. But that didn't stop Roman from spending. He still had enough left over to buy several more estates and keep building the biggest private yacht in the world. This year is no different. Roman Abramovich just bought a $90 million 70-acre vacation stop in St. Bart's, breaking the record for the most expensive price tag paid for a private home this year. Let me repeat that. He bought, in a down market, a $90 million 70-acre vacation spot in St. Bart's. Huh. How do you like that? So today I'll talk a little bit more about the amazing stuff of Roman Abramovich. Why? I don't know. It's fun. I like looking at his toys. He didn't take it from me. Did he take it from you?
Yeah, eat the rich man. It's a shame while people are starving that he has a yacht and cars. Yeah, down with the people, man. Be like the bums in San Francisco, man. There's no excuse for homelessness when you have pigs like that, man.
I don't know about you. I'd rather look at the stuff of Roman Abramovich than the ripped clothing of a bum in the streets of San Francisco. He owns a lot of nice stuff. I'm going to read about it. Look at the boats this guy owns. Never mind the house that was once the home to the Duke and Duchess of Windsor, who gave up the British crown in 36. Wasn't he crypto-Nazi, the Duke of Windsor? Yeah. He was a little bit on the... Okay. Roman bought the estate for $27 million 5 years ago and has spent at least that much on its renovation. Well, at least a lot of craftsmen got work in England. Instead of puking on car fenders, they went to work putting in electrical and plumbing and carpentry. Let's see. In 08, Roman brought this 14,000-square-foot house with 11 bedrooms on 200 acres in Snowmass, Colorado. It's at Wildcat Ridge in Snowmass Village, Colorado. Nice, if you like the snow. Then there's a beautiful rendition of an apartment he's building in London. But the boats interested me. The boats. Listen to what this guy owns. The smallest of his yachts is a 282-foot 282-foot yacht, the Extasia yacht. That's the smallest one. He then owns the Polaris yacht. It is 377 feet long with a price tag of $300 million. Just gorgeous. But that's not his biggest. His biggest yacht is called the Eclipse. It is 540 feet long. It is the final stages of construction by German shipbuilder Blohm and Voss. Ooh, global warming. It should be running on Gavin Newsom's exhalations. This should be running on Bonnie Frank's. Well, we'll let it go at that. Eclipse is 540 feet long, two helipads, several hot tubs, a swimming pool, bulletproof glass, a steam room, and a personal submarine. World's biggest private yacht. He also has lasers to ward off prying paparazzi. That's not something that the hemorrhoid would need. He would put in lasers to make sure that the paparazzi do see him defecating. He also owns a 767-300 that was originally intended for Hawaiian Airlines, but then was customized. The plane has a 30-seat dining room on board along with other amenities. That's nice. It would be nice to have Roman Abramovich as a friend, wouldn't it? Flying somewhere and having dinner in the sky instead of a sandwich that if you ask for it too soon, they call it for the sky marshals. You ever fly first class recently on American? If you ask for water before you take off, you go on a watch list. If you ask for water twice before you take off, they strap you to a chair and beat you with rubber truncheons. I don't know about you. I admire luxury items. They didn't take it from me. What do I care? Somebody has to own them. Why shouldn't it be him? Now, you ask yourself, he also owns a $2.2 million Ferrari FXX, one of only 30 built. I don't like driving racing cars. He owns a Ferrari 360, which I once had. Not a good car. I never liked a 360 Mondial at all. Never. It was a very rough car to drive. The 430 is far better. It's faster and it's more user-friendly. He owns the Chelsea Soccer Club, Modern Art Collection. I'm just looking. Wait, I'm going to be through in a minute. And the wife he has, naturally, she's not ugly. Not ugly at all. Roman's wife is the classic, let us say, Slavic-esque beauty. Slavic-esque beauty. Now his girlfriend is Zaria Dzukova, a model. And he gave her 100 acres of the moon last year. He bought it through the Lunar Embassy and paid only $2,500 for the plot on the moon. Cute. Now, you ask yourself, how did he make his money? That's the interesting part. How did Roman Abramovich make his money, and how did he lose $20 billion? Now, that's the interesting part of the story, which I'm not going to tell you right now because I have something far more important to tell you about. And I baited you with this because I know everyone's a greedy person in dreams. Yeah, they should. They should. We're a capitalist society. We have not yet been converted to Karl Marx's dreamland, no matter how they've tried. I want you to go to sign the Savage Petition to defend free speech. It's free. Okay? My good friends put it up for me from WorldNet Daily. And it says, Michael Savage was the first victim, but others, maybe even you, will soon follow. Fighting back and working, it must be done. Let me explain what it is before you turn the radio off. It is a petition. It is free. It is the Savage fight against censorship. I was added to a list of murderers, terrorists, and others banned from the UK. It's interesting. Many of you don't even know I'm still on this ban list. If you want to turn the radio off, I'm sorry. If you'd rather listen to something else, you can. Did you hear me? I am going to fight until I'm off that list. Why do you think I was put on that list? Because Michael Savage is a nationalist and a patriot banned from the globalist system. I was the first victim, but I won't be the last. Petition for the removal of Britain's ban on Michael Savage. I'm going to read it quickly to you because I want you to go and sign it, Teddy, with a footprint. Whereas Michael Savage, with America's third largest radio talk show audience, has been banned from Britain. Whereas Michael Savage's name was put alongside Russian skinheads imprisoned for murdering 10 immigrants and a Hamas terrorist who executed two Jewish parents and bashed in the head of their four-year-old daughter. Whereas contrary to the accusations of the former Home Secretary, Savage has never advocated violence, repeatedly has called for the lawful enforcement of America's borders, language, and culture. Whereas freedom of speech must be protected to ensure the future of our democracy. Whereas Savage was honored with the Freedom of Speech Award by the radio industry in 07. Whereas Savage's freedom has been denied, his health has suffered, and his very life may be in danger because of the former Home Secretary's actions. We, the undersigned, appeal to your good offices to act with the U.S. State Department and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to persuade the British government to immediately remove Michael Savage's name from its list of banned murderers and terrorists. You put in your first name, your last name, and your email address. And who do you think it goes to? I will tell you who it goes to. It goes to every senator and every congressman in the United States of America. And we're going to try to get a petition for the removal of Britain's ban on Michael Savage going. It costs you nothing. I implore you to do the right thing. Go on to michaelsavage.com, sign the Savage Petition to defend free speech. When I come back, I will tell you what Roman did to lose $20 billion right here in the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Here we were, forced to sit and watch, helplessly, as they ripped our crying, screaming, terrified children away from us.
We now realize how much control the state has and that they can pull any one of your children out of your home right now.
Those are the parents who were brutalized by Child Protective Services in Arizona that I told you about yesterday on the Savage Nation. And it was covered today on CNN, where they were finally interviewed. They were found not guilty, but in the interim, their children were removed by the mean-faced, clipped-haired demons in CPS and the psychotic police department in that city. And the damage has been done. So the parents are suing. They're suing the state. They're suing the police department. They're suing CPS. And they're suing, I believe, one of the major chain stores in the photo department where it all started. The story is they took innocent pictures of their children in a bathtub, and this demon in the Photoshop said, oh, look, that looks like child porn to me. See, he's a sick man, so he would see an infant that – see, if you're not a parent, you would think anybody who has a child is sick, because that's how you look upon children, as a predator. But most parents have taken innocent snapshots of their children. And so these poor people were called in, their children removed from them, and they were thrown in jail, all because of psychotics in the photo department, Child Protective Services, which is not really Child Protective Services. It's Family Destruction Services. It's FDS, most of these departments. This was created as a result of the women's movement. It was allegedly created to protect children, but by and large, it exists to destroy the traditional so-called atomic family. Some call it the nuclear family. And they're doing a very good job indeed. This is the kind of a government bureaucracy that Obama would approve of. Probably going to increase their funding to go after a normal heterosexual mothers and fathers. Now, I don't know what you can say about a story like that. If you want to comment on that, fine. It's up on michaelsavage.com. It'll be back up in a minute. Shocking, just shocking. Democrats on path to repeat the housing disaster. You remember Bernie Frank? Maybe you don't Bernie Frank. Bernie Frank had the banking. Democratic majorities are pressing hard to expand some of the very policies that led to the reckless home lending that in turn helped lead to the great meltdown. And guess who's doing it?
But Bernie Frank in the days of war. Bernie had so much ore over the last year. He had so many days of ore. Him and Rahm had so much fun in the days of ore that the ore ran out and they want more ore. And the only way to get more ore is to have another housing bailout.
See, that's the world you're living in. That's the whole story. That's the whole story. Then you got a schmuck in the Energy Department, Secretary Stephen Chu, Professor Stephen Chu. I'm sure he was a reasonably brilliant physicist, probably a better bureaucrat than he was a physicist. So he's hired by the egghead, Obama, and this egghead, the Energy Secretary, says Americans are like unruly teenagers who need the government to rule them. That's Stephen Chu, Energy Secretary, another egghead, culled from the academic minefields by the chairman and board of eggheaditis. It's unbelievable, the world we live in. So I've given you enough to go on to start with. Play some jazz. Give me a break. I'll be right back. And whatever. 1-800-449-8255. There you go. Take it nice and easy. Take it slow, Johnson. This is a big week. The Hitler of Iran arrives in New York. The strongman of Libya arrived with female hit squad from Libya. They're taking over New York. It's great to entertain dictators in New York. It's wonderful. It gives me a great feeling in my heart to know we're so well protected and so well organized in America that our democracy is so secure that we can allow the Hitler of Iran to arrive, a strongman to arrive with a hit squad with him. It's amazing to me how great America has become under Bush. Actually, it's Clinton, Bush, Obama. The last, you know, I don't think we can ever survive the last 16 years of Clinton and Bush. You know, Obama's like the cherry on the cake here. He didn't do all this. It's 16 years of corruption, 16 years of mismanagement, and now we have Obama for the final blow. He comes in for the coup. Unbelievable to me. Now, the first rule of radio is never promise something and don't deliver it. A while ago, I promised you I would tell you how Roman Abramovich, who owned all those beautiful things, made his fortune such that he could lose $20 billion and still be one of the richest men on earth. Well, like the other Russian oligarchs, Roman Abramovich made most of his billions when Russia handed out the commodity goodies. He got the oil, he got the aluminum, he got the plastic toys, and he got other businesses. Now, the question is how. That's not my business. It's your business. You figure it out. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know. No inside information on it. All I know is he has nice toys, nice houses, cars, boats, planes, wives, girlfriends, shoes, whatever. But as a rich man told me when I was a young kid, I told you the story before. Pardon me, indulge me. This is for the younger people. It's not for anyone over 30. When I was 15 or 16, I told you one friend had a father who was like the tough father, club owner. Who would ever think that in that circle of guys there was a club owner? He was a club owner, a pugilist, a street fighter, a really tough guy, but everyone loved him because he was a quiet John Wayne type, never spoke loudly, had a pair of fists on him like hams. But he was very gentle, like all tough men. He was a gentleman, you know, and in the truest sense. But he was the guy that the kids gravitated to. So when you're 13, 12, you want to know what it's like to be a man, what do? So he'd sit us down on Sundays. We'd go out to the house. We'd eat in the house, usually spaghetti and meatballs, whatever. And, you know, play around ping pong, get in trouble in the neighborhood, whatever. Shoot out Christmas tree lights with BB guns through the basement window. I remember once the best fun I ever had in the winter. Shooting and sticking the BB gun out. Some today you'd be arrested probably putting Sing Sing for shooting out a Christmas light. On the trees, the little lights, no one was hurt. It's innocent stuff. Kids do these things. Tom Sawyer, remember? Mark Twain. Today Mark Twain would be arrested as a childophobe or something. Or inciting violence amongst children. He wouldn't be allowed into Britain. So he would sit down and he would say to us, look, the important thing to remember about money is that the first million is the hardest. Now, that's when a million really meant something. Today, that would have very little meaning. Everyone's a millionaire. He said, the first million is the hardest. Well, I couldn't even understand what that meant. That's in an age when the minimum wage was like a buck. So you say, when the first million is the hardest, the first million, that's a lot of money. I mean, a million? The first million is the hardest. I didn't even know what that meant. But now I know what it means. He's absolutely right. The first million is the hardest. That's what he said. And then he also said that the richest men he knows, the richest men that he knew, and none of them were really rich, were all men who had lost everything several times and bounced back. And he said, guys, remember what I'm telling you. Bounce back is that you have to learn how to take the falls and come back off the mat. That was number two. And I think most importantly, he said, remember, the amount of money you have isn't important because you can only wear one suit and eat one meal at a time. Now, you say, well, that's common sense today. Is that common sense today in a consumer-driven society where you're told to, you know, I don't know, own more than you can use, whatever? So you can only wear one suit at a time and only eat one meal at a time. I thought that was very interesting, those words. And I used them for many, many years in my life when I didn't have much financial fortune to keep me going because there's no shame in being poor. I got to tell you something. I know some very poor people. They're very nice people. I know some poor people who are very bad people and vice versa. The poor or rich has nothing to do with a person's personality. I got to tell you that. It runs across the spectrum. But this poor guy once said to me, he said, show me in the Bible anywhere it says thou shalt be rich. There's no requirement you should be rich. It's not a requirement that you walk around with these things in order to be a good man. If you have them and you're still a good person, good. All the more power to you. But I remember when he said that. He said there's nothing in the Bible. Nothing in the Bible says that you have to be a rich man to be loved by God. And I thought that was very interesting. Here's a guy who told me this. I don't keep in touch with him. He wasn't a particularly great guy, but he was a smart man. He had a little room in a single-room occupancy building in San Francisco. And he and I were friends for a while. And one of my most pleasant moments in my life was him cooking a sausage for me on a frying pan and a two-burner like hot plate in his room as we looked down on the streets and talked about the world. Can you imagine that? So where do you take your pleasure from? Is it the big five-star hotel? Sometimes that could be great. Me, I'd prefer sitting in a room like that sometimes having a good conversation with a sausage. Not all the time anymore. I mean, I'm not into that. That level of my life is over. That I don't do that anymore. It's not that I don't want to. I'm just not in that headspace. So here we are. That's it. And it's neither here nor there. I'm just chatting. It's a talk show. And remember what the word conversation means, boys and girls. It's a lost art. Conversation with verse. With verse, conversation. The object is to keep the conversation moving. And I try to speak with you, my audience of millions, as though we are in a room together and we're friendly, we're having a conversation. The object of a conversation is not to defeat the other guy and render him silent. The object of a conversation, as I learned, is to converse, to share verse with each other. So if you'd like to share verse with Michael Savage, it's easy to do. Not now it isn't, but the phone number, and you know it already, it's jammed the lines. Because every time I get softer and more reasonable, the lines go hot because people are, you know, they're not as intimidated to call the Savage Nation. You know what I'm saying? That's all. That's it. That's the whole story. I don't have to burn up the airwaves in order to have you listen. The audience is there. It goes up and down every day like everything on earth. There's nothing constant. Life is what it is. Que sera, sera. Whatever comes my way, I'll ride it. I told you that years ago. If I have a donkey, I can ride a donkey. If I have a chauffeured limo, I can get in the back of the chauffeured limo and do the telephone just as well as the next guy. I've had both. Okay, so the fact of the matter is, here we are. What do you want to talk about? anything. I want to talk about something that happened. Can I talk about a boat, or is that too personal? What do you want to talk me being banned in Britain and what I should do to get even for a minute, to get it out of my system? By the way, I did decide like 95% on October 15th. I did accept the invitation from the Cambridge Union to debate the issue of free speech. And I will be doing it by video link since I'm not permitted in the country, since I'm such a dangerous person. But my words will be at the debate, actually. I'm going to be doing it out of a remote location here in America. And it will be broadcast live in real time in England. We're going to try to run that for you on the Savage Nation. It's a real, 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 real big treat here in America that I'm very proud to offer you. We have a really big show for you on October 15th. And some other highlights coming up on the Savage Nation this autumn and beyond with God's will and your listenership. So then what's the next? Oh, October 15th is that. Then the 27th, I'm in Washington, D.C. for the very important legal conference. Tell Art to link that back up on michaelsavage.com so the people can find it tonight. Will you, folks, get that back up? I took it up and down. I needed the room. But that I'm going to. I don't give speeches anymore. I'm not hungry for the money. I don't like really giving speeches, to be honest. I love radio. It's enough for me. But I'm going to do this because it's all of the top First Amendment attorneys, lawyers, scholars in the country, in the world. In fact, some freedom-loving British parliamentarians are coming, and I want to meet them. I want to shake their hand, and I know they want to meet me. So I will be there, God willing, again. And I'm moving boats around as I speak to you. I'm not Roman Abramovich. Look, it's my hobby. Boating is my hobby. It's hard for me to repress or suppress the interest I have in the water. It's the one thing on earth that genuinely relaxes me and takes my mind off current events. Let me put it to you that way. Why? Why do I love boating? Because when I'm on a boat and I'm not talking, which is what I go on a boat for, which is why I don't like large groups on a boat. I like me and the dog. Basically, I boated alone for years, the dog and I, Teddy and I. Why? Because when you see the diamonds of light coming at your eyes off the small waves on San Francisco Bay, how in the world can you think about Obama wrecking America? Or when you watch seal pups that were just hatched with the mother seal guiding them, swimming in the bay, and you see this cycle of life year in and year out, how can you worry about Chairman Obama taking a wrecking ball to America? Or when you see a tern diving for a fish. I don't want to wax now already, starting to sound like a parody of myself. You know, I don't want to get into it. But I do this. I mean, I'm a corny guy. I mean, I'm a nature guy. I've always been a naturalist. It's what drew me into science to begin with. I was more interested, though, in the glint in the animal's eye than I was in the animal's eye itself. See, now that's an interesting statement that you have to understand where it's coming from. When I was 18, I wrote in my journal, I am interested in biology, but I'm more interested in the glint in the animal's eye than I am in the animal's eye, which is a nice statement. It's a very interesting statement. What do I mean by the glint in the animal's eye? Anyone who can answer that question. When I say I am interested more in the glint in the animal's eye than in the animal's eye, what do I mean? And the first person to answer that gets a free copy of a cough drop. I'm going to send you a free... I'm not giving out free cough drops. I'm tired. I don't want to talk about my book anymore or the petition. I don't want to do it. But until you sign it, I'm not going to stop talking about it. You have to go on our website. It's free. You sign it. We don't share the list. I'm not giving it to the CIA. Many people are afraid, oh, he's really going to give it away. I'm not giving it to nobody. That's it. They're going to come to regret this. The Labor government will regret what they did to me because it will live in infamy. I can guarantee you what they did to me will live in infamy. I'm going to triumph because I'm in the right. They're in the wrong. I'm David. They're Goliath. They're wrong. I'm right. I win, but not now. You know, just because you say David beat Goliath, it took a lot out of David to beat Goliath. You hear in the Bible, he threw the stone, okay? But you don't understand what it took to get the stone to hit the Cyclops in the eye. Right or wrong? Play a little jazz for me already. I got a migraine. There's a little bit of a hangover tied into it. I'm sorry to admit. Because after yesterday's high on the, I had that cough, that espresso. I was floating on it. I became eloquent. The words flowed. Then I made the mistake of mistakes. Turn it off. Now it's giving me a headache. It's too. Isn't it funny how music changes? It's like a mood sweeps over me. 1 minute the music sounds good. The next minute sounds squeaky. Sounds good. Well, we're just talking about things here and there. So, oh, I'll tell you about last night. That's what I was trying to tell you, because it was a long-winded story of what I wanted to talk about before we get into Britain, feminism, the children being taken, bankruptcy, Congressman Chu, getting all of that, all important, non-important stuff. It's very important you be political. Let me tell you that right now. Because in order for evil to triumph, men like you should do nothing, meaning the good do nothing. And that's how evil has triumphed. That's how you get a guy like Sunstein. That's how you get the guy like whatever from Berkeley, Oakland, whatever his name is. I forgot his name. He's on the ash heaps of history, the guy they put the czar, the energy. I don't want to know his name. He never was nothing. He never will be anything. But see, he keeps picking these nobody, dangerous left-wing radicals, and puts them into positions that nobody even knows who they are. They're not vetted by the FBI. They don't go through a congressional hearing. Nothing. And you're sitting here like a schmuck in a dictatorship. We become like a banana republic under Obama. And he gets away with it. I don't know how he gets away with this. So what's important to me is the glint in the animal's eye, the diamonds of light coming off the bay when I'm out on the boat, and then a few other things. Whatever. It's my business, not yours. So as I was getting to, last night was a like almost surreal night for me, and I drank too much as a result, because I tend to celebrate with a drink or two or three or four. This is the way I am. It's my culture. Whether you like it or not is not my business, nor do I care what you think of me. I celebrate. I offer a guy a good scotch, and I have one or two with everyone in the room, but I'll be right back to tell you.
Savage.
I speak, therefore I am. This is Michael Savage. Welcome back to the program. Joe Stafford, You Belong to Me. Great song. Great memories. Whatever.
See the marketplace and old.
Whoever wrote this, you know, these guys in the 50s could write songs. Today you go in a supermarket, you go, I can't shop anymore. I can't take it. Wherever you go, it's whiny, whiny music about a girl losing a girlfriend. Everywhere you go. Where have the male vocalists gone? Notice I don't mind a female vocalist. Here's Joe Stafford. There is no male vocalist unless you want rap music, which I personally don't particularly prefer. Whatever happened to the baritone, tenor voices? Where did they go? How did they suddenly disappear in America? Who is it that runs the entire entertainment industry that it's all whiny chicks around 12 years old talking about a girlfriend that they lost? A whiny chick with a ring in her nose. You know, everything is. I can't shop. I run out of the store. I feel like I'm in a gigantic experiment to drive me out of the store. I feel like saying, "Mister, change the." Then I got a mall I go to. The guy plays Vivaldi music. If you're semi depressed, you commit suicide in that mall. For years, I thought of suing this guy in the mall, an outdoor mall. I said, "Change the tape." I hate Vivaldi to begin with. Number one, it's depressing. Number two, I can't stand ersatz Vivaldi day and night. The same garbage, ersatz Vivaldi. I said, put anything on but that. And I look at other people and I say, do these schmucks actually hear the music in here? It has to be driving business away. I don't know. I think people are so, numb. They don't even listen to what they're hearing. So that's why I can't take it. That's why I go out of my boat. So it comes back to last night. Now, the story is a little complicated. I've had a boat for 6 years here on the West Coast that I've cherished. I've adored it. And I had a boat before that was a twin diesel, but it was a carver with a very shallow draft, and it blew around like a frisbee on the bay. It was a terrifying experience docking the carver. I did it for 3 years. I had 200 hours on a terrible boat. It was little Hino diesels. The diesels were okay, but one blew out, and I had a mechanic put a new one in. What an experience that was. The greatest mechanic ever met in my life. So then in 2002, I buy a Grand Banks 42 Europa. One of the finest boats ever built in the world. You have to understand boats and how good these boats are. They're not advertised. Now, this thing is built for water. It's built for moving. So the boat has larger propellers and a deeper keel. It's a semi-displacement hull, so it's not really a trawler. It does go up to 17, 18 knots, which is amazing. Twin turbos, greatest engines in the world, Cummins diesels. I've really enjoyed the boat. About 3 years ago, I put on a bow thruster, which really revolutionized boating for me, because as a guy who single hands a 17, 18-ton boat, it's nice to be able to move it into a dock in the wind without fear of being driven against the piling. So I've had the boat for years. So to make a long story short, I bought a new boat, in Florida about 2 months ago, a bigger boat, a bigger Grand Banks. Why I did it is very complicated. I don't want to go into details, but I didn't sell this one. I should have traded it, but since the other boat was bought on the East Coast, and this coat was, there was no trade-in. So I thought about selling this boat, the GB42, but as the time went on, the market's not really there for a used boat, number one. And number two, it was like giving away, I don't know how to put it, a friend. It was a piece of me. I would go down to my dock and I'd look at my boat, and it was as though I saw, you ever look at an object as though it's alive? Now, you anthropomorphize objects. I know that we all do that in a society like ours, whether it be our car or whatever. But I would look at this boat sitting there on the lines, moving up and down in the water. I swear to God, there were days it looked like a horse, a racehorse dying to get out and run around the track. And I would take it out. And I know the boat and I were like one at that time. So I enjoyed it. Nevertheless, I buy the new boat. As I speak with you, the boat is on a ship. We loaded the, the boat loaded on a ship in Fort Lauderdale. It's gone through the Panama Canal. It is now transiting up from a southern Mexican port up to Ensenada. And I had to send people down to get the boat in Ensenada because I don't have the time to go there and come back with it, right? Meanwhile, boat number one, it was decided yesterday in a 10-minute period. It's why I was in a weird mood. I decided to ship the boat that I have here to Florida. And I know it sounds crazy. Why would you buy a new boat in Florida and ship it to California? And why would you ship a boat you have in California to Florida? It doesn't make sense. Well, it doesn't on the surface. But if you analyze it, it does. Because the older boat and the smaller boat is better for the intracoastal waterways. The bigger boat and the newer boat with twin 1,000-horsepower Caterpillars, real high carbon profile. That's why. In fact, I'm thinking of naming the boat High Carbon. This is a boat that Obama definitely wouldn't love. He only likes $7,000 a night suites in Air Force One. Well, he talks about global warming, a bunch of horse crap. You ever hear the malarkey coming out of their mouths?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Simply put, it is past time to talk about starting negotiations. It is time to move forward. It is time to show the flexibility and common sense and sense of compromise that's necessary to achieve our goals. Permanent status negotiations must begin and begin soon. And more importantly, we must give those negotiations the opportunity to succeed.
All right, look, he's a new president. He's a young guy. You can't disagree with everything he says. He means well. He'd like a permanent lasting peace in the Middle East, as have presidents going back now for 60 years. I don't think he can achieve this. I don't know. I think this is one of those biblical divisions that will never be cured. It's sort of the eternal political wound that never heals. But we wish President Obama luck on this one. That's all I could say. I mean, what are you going to say? You're going to sit like an idiot and say everything he says is wrong? You know, what does that make you? You got to be crazy. The guy's trying in some areas. I don't think he's going to succeed. So if you just joined us in the Savage Nation, we're talking about world events, local events, national events, personal events, all aboard. Welcome to the Savage Nation. One of the statements I made in the last hour, I'm getting a lot of calls on by chance, where I said that although I was a young biology student before I went to grad school, I was more interested in the glint in the animal's eye than in the animal's eye. Which is a nice statement that should go in my biography if Ellis is listening. My biographer listens to the show and adds to the biography as the show goes on because things do come out that I forgot to put, you know, whatever, down. I saw a show last night on hoarding. I watch weird television. I don't know. Maybe that's why I have a jaundiced view of the world. There are people who apparently have a psychological disorder, like for hoarding things they can't throw out. I saw one last night. The woman was crazy. The house was so cluttered they took the children away. And when they show a team in there trying to help her get rid, she couldn't get rid of anything. The most she could let them do was put things in boxes. Then she would sort through them, a bug job. In my day, Creedmoor, straitjacket, this is pre-Thorazine. Just put them in a straitjacket and put them in the Creedmoor, let them march around so she can't hurt. What is she doing in the street with children? Why should she have a television show? The same reason Fox News survives certain people on it. Same thing. But the question is, why is everybody considered normal even though they're crazy? You know, let me rephrase the statement. Why is it that even overtly crazy people are declared to be perfectly fine? It's just a lifestyle choice to be a hoarder. Who created? You can't cure her. She's incurable. Another guy, the family threw him out. They would show him standing there with a therapist and the daughter crying almost, the grown daughter. She'd open a box up and she'd say, "Dad, what is this?" And he would say, "String." From like 25 years, papers he couldn't throw out, newspapers, magazines, string. You know, there's a little bit of the hoarder in all of us. I have a bit of it in me. Now, don't get me wrong. In other words, because I write, because I've written 25 books, I've saved all my manuscripts. Admittedly, it was a smart thing to do because most of them have a great deal of cursive writing, handwriting, and I have a beautiful script. So one day it'll have some interest and some value, whatever. But I certainly keep notes and this and that. I have a lot of trouble throwing things out. Now, it's not like I'm a hoarder. Most of my houses are extremely neat. I'm fanatically neat and orderly. You know, when it comes to, like, food and stuff, my refrigerator is like a shining example on the hill. You know, I'm immaculate. But with comes, like, production of life, because I always felt, you know, life is so fleeting that the only things that we have to leave behind, if we are creative, are what we have created. So if you're a sculptor, you leave your sculptings. If you're a painter, you leave your paintings. Music, you leave your scores. And if you're a writer, you leave your writing. You know what I'm saying? So I could relate to it up to a point, but I don't understand how it works. I knew a guy when I was young. His name was Gold something. I won't recommend. He's a nice old man. Fought in World War I, had been gassed, mustard gassed. And he surprisingly lived to an old age, even though he'd been mustard gassed in a trench. And my father introduced me to him, and very nice, you know, poor man, but he was a hoarder. Dad would whisper to me everything on his side about people as they came in the market. He would say, "Over here," he says, "him, he's a hoarder." No, always they gave me a little insight. Like if there was a doctor, remember I told you about the Jekyll and Hyde medical doctor? One day the doctor would come in immaculate, tie, white shirt, shaved, perfectly manicured. And yes, sir, and he would buy certain things and negotiate with all of the, you know, poor men in the business. And then 2 days later, he'd come in disheveled, ripped, sued, no shave, like, you know, bodily fluids on his vest, a horror job. And the men in my father's market would still talk to him, "Yes, doctor." And he'd be, and I said, "Dad, what the heck happened to the doctor?" And he'd go, "Shh, shh." And he'd take me in the back and he'd say, he said, "He's a Jekyll and Hyde. He drinks and he becomes that way." I said, "Oh, my." So I learned what a Jekyll and Hyde was. I mean, that was long before guys like Bonnie Frank or any of the other Democrats appeared on the scene. You know, one day they act nice for the poor, and the next day you find out they're robbing the treasury, in my opinion. You know, so I learned different type of characters, even as a youth. But I did meet the hoarder, and I remember once, in those days, you remember cigarette packages had aluminum foil inside them? He would save that. And once somebody went to his house, the hoarder, and they found a giant, I swear to God, the guy was like an old guy. They found a roll of aluminum foil rolled up 20 feet big. It filled up an entire room. I don't know how he met. I mean, like, can you do that physically? He made the whole thing fill a room of aluminum foil that he saved from cigarette wrappings. Crazy the things do. You know what I'm saying? I think it's what makes life interesting. But today, most of this kind of thing is gone because people are like flatlined with Prozac and drugs. So you say, well, how come the hoarders? I don't know. How come they can't drug her? How come they have a drug for everything? They can't drug her and make her stop being a hoarder, I ask myself. Well, I don't know. I mean, there's interesting things. There's certain questions that cannot be answered. For example, well, there's always another for example. This is a thing. Now, we'll take your calls on the Savage Nation. Debbie in New York on WOR. Thank you for calling. And what's on your mind, young lady?
Oh, I just wanted to know if you had an answer to your question about the animal.
I ask the question, what do I mean by I was more interested in the glint in the animal's eye than the animal, than the eye? What do you think that means?
I think that means you're just more interested in watching the animal be an animal.
Yes, and I'm more interested in the soul of the animal, that is, or the workings of the animal than I am in the physics of the eye. You know what I mean?
Right, yes.
In other words, if you look in a dog's eye, what do you hit? You see blackness in the middle of anyone's eye, right?
Right.
But what animates the soul of a human being? Are you going to say that it's purely a function of biological forces, or is there a soul?
There's a soul.
Well, this is interesting. How long has it been since you've heard the word soul mentioned by anyone in the American media?
A long time.
A long time. And how long has it been since any government official has referred to what animates a human being as opposed to what feeds a human being or what clothes a human being? Never. And that's because we're living in an increasingly mechanistic, statist society where there's no reference to the soul. That's because they have tried to make God dead. You understand that?
I do. And I just wanted to call up to say I'm a new listener to you, and I think you are just the best. You are right.
That is so... That's very nice. Always, every listener builds a show. You may say I'm being sarcastic. I'm not. In fact, I'm so happy that you said that I'm going to send you a free copy of my new book, Banned in Britain, when it's out. We're going to the printer next week. Thank you for the call. Stay on the line. No more glint calls. Oh, a few more glint calls. That's all. Then we'll go on. See, women like glint calls. The guys turn it off and they go to mixed martial arts. The minute I get soulful and soft and warm, the women flock to the show. The guys think that I've gone soft in the head and they don't want to listen. This stuff with the glint in the soul, Mike. Get back to that real stuff, Mike. I could do both. What are you going to do? You know, I'm variable. Like, here's a story that just caught my eye. I'm looking at the stories on the web. You think I'm going to sit here now and just talk about Sunstein? And I'm not going to do it. You can get that from anybody. That's all. Hunt for clues to sea life deaths at Farallon's. You see what I mean? So they're now looking at whale poop. They're trying to study what's going on with the ocean seals and birds that seem to be dying off on the west coast here off California. It says, in a change in diet that several bird species at the Farallon National Wildlife Refuge are unable to make, it is a change in diet, see? The tiny shrimp-like crustacean called krill has come in instead of fish and anchovies, and several birds can't make the change. And as a result, colonies of fish-eating cormorants, seagulls, and murres failed to breed this year on the Farallon Islands. And over the past few months, dozens of dead birds and even dead sea lions have been found on local beaches. That's terrible. Why? Now, why did that happen? If you studied Ecology 101, which I was lucky enough to do 30 years ago, there's a food chain. And the anchovies have disappeared for reasons the scientists don't understand. And that in their absence, birds and mammals such as the humpback that eat krill are thriving, while the animals that are eating only fish are in trouble, and the whale excrement served as evidence. So there's an extraordinary number of dead animals. I love the cormorant, a black bird with white plumes that can dive as deep as 300 feet for its prey. And the cormorant did not produce any chicks this year on the Farallons or on Alcatraz. That's compared with 15,000 chicks in 07. Why? Because it's an anchovy-loving bird. So it's a serious thing. It's the first complete breeding failure in 40 years, I read, during a year without El Nino condition so far. So there are cycles in nature. And if they go cyclically in and out, you'll do okay in the long run. But if they don't, if the cycles don't alter, you're going to wind up with a dead species, an extinct species. My favorite bird to watch fishing, of course, is the pelican, and that's found both on East and West Coast. To watch a pelican fly in formation is still one of the great sights on Earth. That's if you watch them change point, which is still one of the most amazing things to witness on Earth as an observer of nature. Why do you think birds fly in formation and they constantly change? The bird that flies point is constantly changing. Now, there's two theories on that. I gave you mine 2 years ago. I said to you it's so that any bird in the flock can be the leader. They're very communistic in that regard. Actually, the pure communism is what I'm talking about. There's no such thing as pure communism. It's all run by gangsters. There's no such thing as the ordinary man running a communist society. But the birds are very universalist communitarian. Let's put it to you that way. So if any one of the lead birds, let's say a bird dies, gets shot, gets eaten by a predator, gets a heart attack or whatever, any bird can take the lead and the flock will be okay. Another theory, which I've heard from ornithologists, is that the reason they change point is because it's easier to fly behind another bird because of the wind, the velocity of the wind coming off the other bird. It's sort of like flying in their slipstream, okay? And consequently, it's less stress to keep shifting point that way. So what I'm saying to you is if you observe nature, and then you have been doing this all of your life as I have been doing, and then you enter the political world and you start to observe the political animals, as I did in The Political Zoo, a book I wrote a few books ago, you can see why I have no friends in the government media complex. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So we can move back to politics. You know, it's always interesting to be the Q factor on Obama and Israel and Palestine and global warming and Sunstein and this one and that one. But at a certain point, I mean, I've heard enough of it all. I know who Obama is. I know what he wants to do. And I understand that he's got to be stopped. And I know that there are many people, millions of you, understand all of that. And you're standing up to him. You're going to the town hall meetings. You understand most of what he says doesn't mean anything. That he's a front man for the far left, and that he himself may think he's doing good, but he's not doing good. He's going to destroy our way of life, and that this nation's future is hanging in the balance, that he's trying to alter the entire life of America because he's a narcissist, an egomaniac, and a radical leftist. It's as simple as that. Now, if this was a right-winger trying to instill a respect for our borders, language, and culture, you can bet that the empty skirts in the media would be screaming. But because the empty skirts in the media are all bought and sold or dumb or actually Marxist themselves without even knowing it, they give the guy a pass. So now that I've given you my 30 seconds of reality here, in the political world, let me go back to Farallon Islands and the whale excrement and krill and the dying of the cormorant or something. Man gets 6 months for pummeling dog to death. Our bath time photos, child pornography. That's a hot one. Horrible. No, the pornography is in the minds of the Child Protective Services and the police that did this to them. There's the pornography. What's this? Elderly woman shot to death in, this is my neighborhood here, in my neighborhood. Elderly woman? A woman in her 70s was found shot to death today outside her home in Tiburon, just the fourth homicide in that town in the past 40 years. The victim, whose name and exact age and everything, was found by a friend at her home in the 600 block at Hillary's on 948. Blah, blah, blah. That's terrible. Oh, that's awful. I don't like that. Old woman like that? What old? Is that old already, 70. Wonder. You can't guess with things like this. You just can't guess. You can't guess. But we got a lot of crime here that the libs try to sweep under the rug and say it doesn't exist. Because, you know, they're protective of the illegal immigrant, and they can do no harm. That's all. Sign the Savage petition to defend free speech. Read the secret emails blacklisting Savage, beating the liberal blacklist. What did Hank know and when did he know it? That's a great article on my website. What did Hank know and when did he know it? Because I've long complained about what did Hank know and when did he know it. This man has done the research, John Crudell, and he's talking about the former Treasury Secretary. And he says, did the former head of Goldman Sachs use as a government position to enrich his friends during one of the most tumultuous times in U.S. financial history? I didn't say that. Today I didn't. I must have said it 100 times. But this article is not to be missed. It's on linked up on michaelsavage.com. Then ads, Cambridge Union. Our bath time photos, child pornography. Shocking. A Jewish New Year sermon by Michael Savage. I think it's very good. Obama says to the U.N., act or risk irreversible catastrophe. Hogwash. Energy Secretary Stephen Chu, says that the American people are like teenagers and they need the government to tell them what to do. You hear this? The amazing stuff of Roman Abramovich. I opened the show with that.
Did you pick up a Barney Frank? There's Barney Frank. He's about to do the housing bubble again. There's a Barney Frank. Got away with it the first time, and he got loads of war because it was the days of war for him and Rahm Emanuel and your friend, and so he wants more days of war.
Savage.
is the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. News, views, and reviews. That's a phrase I created when I was a local talk show host, stolen by many and used by some. But the fact is I still do news, views, and reviews. I do it my own way. Let's go to Texas. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey there, Michael Savage. I just want to let you know that I'm a real fan of yours, and I heard you talking to a truck driver a couple of weeks ago, and I decided to paint up my whole entire trailer with Michael Savage sayings and philosophies, and that of the sort to get the message out there to America that the left wing is destroying us and that we need to get more conservative.
Well, that's not badly put. I think that's quite literate. So where are these slogans? Inside the cab?
No, sir. They are on the outside of the trailer so everybody can see them.
Oh, my God. Well, whatever you do, don't drive through San Francisco with them, because the good, tolerant liberals are liable to express their displeasure. As you well know, they trash any car that doesn't support the communist state, the United Soviet States of America.
I'm familiar with that, Dr. Savage, but you know something? I think some causes are worth certain risks, and that of the sort. And I've been listening to you long enough to know that if I'm a good American and I care about my country, then I'm going to get the message out there for people to start attending the tea parties and the rallies and to let them know what's going on, whether they want to know it or not, you know? I feel like it's a duty and a responsibility as an American listening to you and hearing how passionate you are on how passionate I need to be out here.
Well, John, what I'd like you to help me with, and every truck driver listening to this show, is figure out a way to get the message out that Britain banned the U.S. I mean, should we start banning British goods? Should we start dumping British goods, not buying British goods until they get my name off the list? What do you think about that? How about a general boycott of British goods, banning British goods, don't move British goods, longshoremen don't move British goods? They want to see a real boycott moving? I can do that. I can start it going. I don't know where it'll end, but I'll tell you the truth.
Well, you know something, if you do it and you say we need to do it, then as far as I'm concerned, then it needs to be done. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I know that you are smart, and a lot of people think, you know, oh, you shouldn't hear everything, you shouldn't do everything you hear by this guy or whatever, because I talk about you all the time, and everyone's like, oh, yeah, I know that guy's an idiot or whatever, and I say, you know something, he ain't an idiot, I think you just feel convicted by the things that he says. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't give a dang what they say. You know, if you think we need to do it, then dang it, we need to do it.
Well, let me do this. Let me send you a free copy of Banned in Britain. It'll be out in about a month, 6 weeks. That's number one. But number two, would you do me a favor, John? I'm sure you're internet savvy. Would you go on to MichaelSavage.com and sign the petition that's going to go to every congressman and senator to make them move to get my name off that list? Would you do that for me?
You bet your tail end I'll do it.
That's what I need you to do. Peace and love. Do it legally. If I can get 100,000, 200,000, 300,000, a million names on that petition, you can bet that the congressmen and senators who are up for re-election are going to try to do everything they can to do the right thing. Thank you very much, truck driver John from Texas. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Florida, Elaine, welcome to the program. You're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, do you know what you do for me in my life? I appreciate, understand, and agree with your political views, but mostly I love your personal nices. I love when you talk about your doggie that you go on the boat with, and I love that story you told about the bug that went in your ear. That
oh, God, that was terrible. Well, that was definitely God talking to me. I heard him. When I finally wasn't listening, when that bug went in my ear, I said, okay, I'm listening, God. I'm sorry.
I love when you tell your personal stories. It just resonates with me. I enjoy every single thing you say about your personal life, including the fact that I'm proud of you that you're going to be talking to the Cambridge, what are they called?
Union, yeah, on the 15th. Well, they have to do it by video link because the good, fair-minded liberals of Britain think I'm such a dangerous man that I'm not even allowed in the country. Can you imagine that? You know, the more I think about it, the angrier I get. You've got a murderer like Ahmad Ahmadinejad, who is torturing and murdering his political opposition. He's not banned from Britain. You got Gaddafi, who orchestrated the bombing of the Pan Am jet. He's not banned from Britain. You've got people even in the political world in America who egged on crowds in Harlem to burn down Freddie's Fashion Mart. They're not banned from Britain. How is that? How come a conservative who's never harmed anybody is banned in Britain, do you think, Elaine?
Well, somebody did this to you. Someone in Obama's government did this to you. There's no question.
Well, that's my guess. Somebody did it. And the person who's supposed to undo it is Hillary Clinton. She is the U.S. Secretary of State. So all you got to do is ask yourself why she's not intervening on behalf of an American citizen. Ask yourself that question. And I want to get 100 senators and congressmen to pressure Hillary Clinton to act on behalf of Michael Savage. Because what goes around comes around, Elaine. Thank you for your kind words. I don't want to sit here and complain about it anymore. I'd rather talk about a pelican because, you know, the show eventually comes to an end. You go your way, I go my way, then life resumes, and there it is. You know, that's how it works. We've got a lot of callers on pelicans, glints, soul. Everyone, when a minute I said soul, they want to hear about it. Let's go back to the Chief Kahuna, Obama, speaking on relations between Israel and Palestine. Let us hear clip two.
Palestinians have strengthened their efforts on security. But they need to do more to stop incitement and to move forward with negotiations. Israelis have facilitated greater freedom of movement for the Palestinians and have discussed important steps to restrain settlement activity. But they need to translate these discussions into real action on this and other issues.
All right. A lot of presidents wanted the two-state solution. Yep. From your words to from your mouth to God's ear. Something tells me it won't work, but okay, he's certainly trying. Let's see, is he on television now? Let's hear clip seven now. I want to hear this one. He's on CNN.
Again, I think it's important for the media, you know, not to do any media bashing here, to recognize that right now in this 24-hour news cycle, the easiest way to get on CNN or Fox or any of the other stations, MSNBC, is to just say something rude and outrageous. You know, if you're civil and polite and you're sensible and you don't exaggerate the bad things about your opponent, and you know, you might maybe get on one of the Sunday morning shows, but you're not gonna be on the loop. Part of what I'd like to see is
hold it. Let's see. He says that if you're rude, you get on Fox News or CNN. He says if you're polite and don't exaggerate, you will not get on those stations. So let's see. I'm banned in Britain, which is the single biggest story about a media personality in current American history, and I'm not on CNN or Fox. How does that work, Obama? How could that be? How is that possible? I'm not even going to dwell on it. I don't really care. I don't care anymore. I know that I know that right is on my side. I know that history is on my side. I know decency is on my side. And I know that I will prevail. And all of those people who have helped me will have done the right thing. And all of the others will be seen for what they are in history. Because whether it be in my book or anyone else's book who's written about the times we are living in, which are very filled with turmoil, you will come to see who the showmen are and who the real truth-sayers are. Okay? They've got to line themselves up with the right thing here. Thus far, there's no movement from any of them because they think they can ignore you. They're going to be wrong. There's going to be an avalanche soon in my favor. I haven't pushed this hard enough because I really don't want to spend a lot of time talking about myself in that regard. Houston, Texas, Jason, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing, Mike? I'm going to tell you why Hillary Clinton is not doing anything on your behalf. It's because under the Obama administration, there's no longer an America as a whole. There's only those who are going to fall in line, and those are in his way. And you are in his way. That's why there's no help coming from the government. That's why.
Well, that I can understand, but how come there's no help coming from Limbaugh, O'Reilly, Hannity, and all of the other great kahunas of talk radio who call themselves patriots and conservative? How come that is?
Because they're the ones who are going to fall in line really fast.
Oh, my God. I think you're right. I actually do think you're right. I actually fear that. And I actually think that I see the Quislings making the moves already to kiss the butt of the Obama administration while still pretending that they're waving the flag. I see it. I can feel it, too, Jason.
Well, I tell you what.
Well, look, Jay, let me say this. I'm too deeply into who I am and what I believe in to change right now. And, you know, during the Soviet era, there was an underground press that was not in favor with the government. They were called the Samizdat, I believe. And in many ways, I began as an underground a voice, and that's the way it's going to be. If that's the way it has to be, that's the way it has to be. I will remain Dr. Dissent so long as I am blessed to have a radio show and I have the freedom to speak and have the health to speak. When the day comes that I don't have this, I won't speak. You won't hear from me anymore. I'll watch the Pelicans go by. Jason, thank you very much for those words. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Las Vegas, Stan, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Mr. Savage, I just want to let you know I did go online today and signed the petition on your behalf.
How many people have signed up by now? It's only in the hundreds, right, Stan?
I didn't take a look at that.
Can anyone look at that for me on the and call me? Because it says how you, it's interesting. World Net Daily helped me. They put it together. They did a beautiful job. I want to thank them on the air. But it shows you how many have signed the petition by now. What else, Stan?
Well, the other couple of things really quick. As you mentioned the other day, Dental College and the course on stupidity, I wasn't sure if you were aware that he Obama there for 2 years before he transferred to Columbia.
Wait a minute, I'm sorry, I missed that. Obama did what?
Obama went to Occidental College for 2 years before he transferred to Columbia.
Oh.
Okay, and then the other thing was I read a great book, Young Stalin. He was the founder of the Weather Underground. He was the weatherman in Tiflis, Georgia, and he was using his Weather Underground movement to rob for Lenin to raise money.
Wait a minute, he called it the Weather Underground? Stalin called it that?
He did. I was shocked. I almost fell on my chair when I read that.
You're telling me that the American left, Bill Ayers, the friend of Obama, stole that from Stalin's youth?
Absolutely. Plus, today is Lenin's birthday, April 22nd. Most people aren't aware of that.
Well, I know this day, September 22nd, you mean, not April. Wait, you said April 22nd is Lenin's birthday?
Lenin's birthday, yes.
Right. April 22nd is also somebody else's birthday, isn't it?
I don't know, but I do know Lenin's birthday, and that's who they meant to commemorate.
Well, September 22nd is the first day of autumn. That's today. You know that, don't you, Stan?
True, yes,
Well, let's celebrate the autumn equinox. Thank you very much, Stan. I see we have 4,000 signatures so far. Not bad for the first day. If we can get 4,000 a day, 20,000 a week, 80,000 a month, I'll get a million by the end of the year. Okay? Okay, Palm Beach Lynn, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Mr. Michael Savage, I love when you talk about your boat. Please finish your story about your boat. And I
Okay, where did I break off? I forgot already.
I'd pay a whole lot to see that boat. And I wish
Wait, what part of the story did you hear? Let me pick it up from where it was. So I'm shipping the older, smaller boat on a ship from Ensenada to Fort Lauderdale, okay? While my other boat, my newer boat, is coming in from Fort Lauderdale virtually within a two-day period of each other. But I didn't make that decision until yesterday when I found a ship going from Ensenada to Fort Lauderdale literally 2 days after the other one comes in. So I called up a guy, a captain friend. I said, Mike, can you get that boat down there this week? He said, I could leave tonight. So what happened was he came over. I hope he's out at sea. I called him 30 minutes ago, but they were in a cell phone. And he was off the coast of Monterey approaching Point Concepcion on the way to Ensenada. He's a great guy, and I don't want to tell you much about him. He's a former Green Beret. You would never know this. You know, see, this is the beauty of people, is that you don't know who they are by looking at them. From the movies and from the imagery that Hollywood puts out, the hero, you know, the real hero looks like a schmuck, and the schmuck is the actual hero, which is not to say this guy looks like the latter. But what I'm saying is an ordinary guy who was a hero with many medals from Vietnam. So he comes over last night. He said, I'll leave tonight. So it was a right after the show, I had to run down to the boat. He got a friend over, and he says, oh, he's an Army buddy of mine. So that means they were both in the Special Forces together. Another guy you would never know, you're looking at who the guy is, ordinary middle-aged guys, both very heroic men. And they had to go to Safeway and buy the food and, you know, say goodbye to the boat. So 8 o'clock last night was a low tide here, a zero tide. They couldn't get out till about 10, 10:30. And then I called this morning, and he was off Santa Cruz, then he was off Monterey in a heavy fog. They're only running at 1,600 RPM, doing maybe 8, 9 knots, because you can't go faster with quarter-mile visibility off the coast of California. And I knew we weren't getting a heat wave when I heard they've been telling us. This is interesting. I was tied into the global warming fantasy. The meteorologists have been saying we're about to get a heat wave in the West Coast in San Francisco. We're ready to die. Put on the air conditioning. Meanwhile, I see last night there's a heavy fog. He tells he's stuck in a fog, basically, moving at a very slow pace. I said, what heat wave? What happened to you? These schmucks can't even predict a heat wave 2 days ahead, but they're telling me there's going to be a catastrophe tomorrow unless I shut down everything I believe in so that the Al Gore can make a fortune on carbon credits. Anyway, so he's heading down to Ensenada. And this is amazing. It's the other boat comes in on the 27th. This boat goes out on the 29th. They got to do a transfer and a pickup and a this and a that. And that's all going on right now. Does that tell you the rest of the story?
You are going to have the best of both worlds.
Well, I'm very lucky. I worked all my life to have what I have. And I decided, you know what? There isn't too much time left to enjoy it. So I may as well try to enjoy it now. Does that work, Lynn?
You definitely deserve to enjoy it. And you know...
Well, I have not... I got to tell you the truth. I know a lot about boating on San Francisco Bay in this area. I've been doing it for many years. I don't know anything about the Intracoastal, but I love the Intracoastal in Florida. And frankly, I've been wanting a boat down there ever since I have been going there. And I go there a couple of times a year. And I've envisioned having my boat on the Intracoastal. You know what I'm saying?
I envisioned that for you. I work with a gentleman. We're caretakers of a place. And he has a place on the Intercoastal. And I said, boy, Michael, he'd love having his boat over on the Intercoastal. I said,
well, where are you, up on Lake Worth?
No, I'm in Palm Beach.
Yep, beautiful. Well, one of the things I love about boating there is going in and out of the keys, of the slips, and up and down the Intracoastal into the inlets and looking at the houses. I love the architecture of Florida. I'll be right back.
Savage.
We live in extremely dangerous times, and make no mistake about it, the liars in the Obama administration, the liars in the media who are saying that you got to be polite are full of crap. The mark of a democracy is not to be polite to your political opposition. The mark of a democracy is to be able to yell as loudly as you can, I disagree with you, and here are the reasons why, and I'm not going to be intimidated by you. But the day you start being intimidated in advance, the opposition is won. Don't let them beat you down with their crap about, oh, you're not polite. Oh, you mean violence. Bull crap. They're the ones who mean violence. Their violence is a destruction of the United States Bill of Rights. That's violence to me. Now, I want to tell you something else. I may be a man alone right now, but I have millions and millions of listeners to this program. And as I said to you, if that's the way it is, that's the card I was dealt. That's the card I'm going to play. And I made a comparison to the Samizdat. The Samizdat was a dissident activity within the Soviet Union before the wall fell down. And what was that? That's when people produced censored publications by hand, and they passed the documents from reader to reader, and they built a foundation for the resistance of the 1980s, which led to the collapse of the Soviet Union. It was a grassroots practice that had to be engaged in to evade officially imposed censorship, and it was filled with danger because punishments were meted out by the government to people caught possessing or copying sensitive materials. Now, thus far, Sunstein and Obama have not yet taken us to that point where they can stop us from saying what we believe or punish us for saying what we believe. But I can guarantee you, if you don't stop these left-wing Leninists in their tracks by saying, you're not going to stop me, you're the one committing violence against the Constitution, they will stop us and they will punish us. Now, where does the word Samizdat come from? Etymologically, the word Samizdat is made out of two words. Sam in Russian means self or by oneself, and izdat is Russian for publishing house. In other words, self-published. Isn't it interesting? I'm in very good company. Banned in Britain, self-published. New York won't touch it. Now think about it. Four books in a row, New York Times bestsellers, and the great publishers of conservative books on Publishers Row will publish one joke book after another, calling themselves conservative publishers. I don't need them. I don't want them. I need you. I want you in the Savage Nation Army. Go to michaelsavage.com and sign that petition.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The big news is that Obama keeps pushing a far-left college professor agenda, which is disconnected from the reality of the world, the reality of America, the reality of the average person. There are three types of leaders. They fall into three categories. There's an autocrat, there's a theocrat, and a Democrat. Now, Obama runs as though he's a Democrat. We know he's not a theocrat, but many of us think he's an autocrat. And the fact is, the only thing saving us from his autocratic tendencies is an analysis that everyone is saying no to Obama. Everyone is saying no to the American president these days, according to the Jerusalem Post, Amir Mizrach. And he said it's not just that they're saying no, it's also the way they're saying no. The Saudis twice said no to Obama's request for normalization gestures towards Israel. Twice. And they say, who says no to the American president twice? What must they think of Obama in the desert kingdom? The North Koreans said no to repeated attempts at talks by test-launching long-range missiles in April. Russia and China keep on saying no to tougher sanctions in Iran. The Iranians keep saying no to offers of talks by saying they're willing to talk about everything except a halt to uranium enrichment. Palestinian Authority President Abbas is saying no by refusing to meet with Netanyahu. The Israelis said no by refusing to agree to a settlement freeze or even a settlement moratorium until and unless the Arabs ante up their normalization gestures. The only thing Obama did manage to get Netanyahu and Abbas to say yes to was a photo op at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York. So why is everyone saying no to Obama? They say it's the economy. Everyone has it worked out by now. The great secret is out. America's economy has made Obama a weak president, and he will likely remain weak throughout the first term. He has about 2 years to pull the American economy out of its free fall before he begins his reelection campaign, if he can do it. And that's a big if. Chances are good that he'll get reelected, and in his second term, he could try to pull some geopolitical strings. But for the next 3 years, expect to see a world that says no to Obama. You hear this? And that's a real pity. Because there are some real and imminent issues that need to be addressed. North Korea is getting more bellicose and not being punished. The North Koreans have violated every single international agreement and norm, and nothing tangible has happened to them. You can thank Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. In Iran, they say, look at how bad they're being, and they're getting away with it. And so it goes on and on and on. And they conclude by saying, in Iraq and Afghanistan, Iran has the U.S. president by the Kishkas, in a manner of speaking, and so do the Taliban. In other words, we're bogged down there. Now, even though he's an impotent president, a U.K. paper is saying Obama the impotent, the disappointment is tangible, the man is pushing for a new economic world order, and he's going along with the left-wing lie that climate change is an irreversible catastrophe if not addressed. This is insanity. It's the left-wing agenda from top to bottom. And here he gives a speech at the UN today, saying that he's got to do more to address the nation's climate change obligations. Really? But what about the General Assembly? What are they going to do about climate change? They're going to become God all of a sudden? Obama asserted today that while the United States was slow to respond to the global warming threat, his administration is doing more to combat climate change than any in history. Oh, really? Isn't that something? And he said if the U.S. doesn't address the problem, it could create an irreversible catastrophe. Well, my opinion is he is creating an irreversible catastrophe with his left-wing fanaticism. Remember, former President Bush rejected the 1997 Kyoto Protocol for cutting greenhouse gas emissions because major developing nations such as China and India refused to do so. You hear this? The U.S. House bill passed earlier in the year would set the United States' first federal mandatory limits on greenhouse gases. So they're going to curtail factories, power plants, and other sources to cut their emissions by 17% from 2005 levels. and by 83% by mid-century. In other words, we'll be using buggy whips again by the time the left-wing maniacs get through with us. He has never held a real job. The only thing he's done is run the Harvard Law Review, which, as you know, is not connected to reality.
He's staying in a $7,000 a night suite in New York City while he's doing this.
Where, in the Waldorf Astoria?
Exactly right.
He has good taste for a college teacher. Teachers always liked boondoggles, if I remember my past. They loved to talk the talk, but they wouldn't walk the walk, you know? You hear about the energy secretary, Dr. Chu, saying that Americans are like teenage kids who don't know what they're doing and they need to be told what to do by Big Brother, the government? Secretary Chu, another college teacher, never held a real job. Energy secretary, you hear this one? If this guy tripped over an oil well, I can guarantee you he wouldn't know he tripped over an oil well. I'm sure he's a brilliant physicist or so, or a good bureaucrat. Doesn't mean he knows what he's talking about outside of the ivory tower. And now the communist of Honduras is coming back. Zelaya is coming back from Brazil's embassy. And he's been in exile since June 28th. And here we go again. Our country is backing the communist return. This is unbelievable. He is supported by the United States while the country itself threw him out. This is one of the biggest stories of our time, that we would support a communist dictator and his return over the will of the people of his own country. Listen to what Hillary Clinton said. It is imperative that dialogue begin, that there be a channel of communication between President Zelaya and the de facto regime in Honduras. Listen, it's a legitimately elected government in Honduras. Zelaya was thrown out. He's a communist dictator. Have we been taken over by a communist government? You know, I had a dream last week that I spoke to Vice President Biden, of all people. I never think about him.
Wow.
And I said to him, do you realize that we have a proto-Soviet state in the United States of America? And he said, I know we do, and I'm very worried about it. The reason I thought of him is because I think he's actually more centrist than any of the fanatics in the Obama administration, including Hillary Clinton. I think Biden is a centrist Democrat who may know what's going on. Why don't you invite Biden on the show? I tell him that we're sending out a peace offering to him. We'd like very much to get his opinion of what's going on.
We'll send him an invitation, an open invitation to be on the show.
No, I doubt that he'd come on the show. So that's some of the news. The big news to me, as you well know, is and the most important thing of today, not to be overlooked, is that every listener to this show, every listener, I beg you to go to michaelsavage.com and sign a petition. It's free. Sign the petition, which will go to every senator and congressman in the United States, to get my name off the banned list in Britain. It says, Michael Savage was the first victim, but others, maybe even you, will soon follow. It's a fight against censorship. It's not only about Michael Savage. To take the only American United States, the only United States broadcaster, ban him from a Western democracy, and have the entire media establishment silent, to have the entire government establishment silent. Here is the petition for the removal of Britain's ban on Michael Savage. To Congress of the United States, whereas Michael Savage, with America's third largest radio talk show audience, has been banned from Britain, whereas Smith listed Savage's name alongside Russian skinheads imprisoned for murdering 10 immigrants and a Hamas terrorist who executed two Jewish parents and bashed in the head of their four-year-old daughter, whereas contrary to the accusations of the former Home Secretary, Savage has never advocated violence and repeatedly has called for the lawful enforcement of America's borders, language, and culture, whereas freedom of speech must be protected to ensure the future of our democracy, whereas Savage was honored with the Freedom of Speech Award by the radio industry in 2007, whereas Savage's freedom has been denied, his health has suffered, and his very life may be in danger because of the former Home Secretary's actions, we, the undersigned, appeal to your good offices to act with the U.S. State Department and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton to persuade the British government to immediately remove Michael Savage's name from its list of banned murderers and terrorists. It's a free petition. All you got to do is sign your first and last name and your email address, and you click to sign. And that's it. And you can support the petition by emailing it to your entire friendship list, bookmarking it on your favorite social network. I need tens of thousands of names, Beowulf, and I need hundreds of thousands of names, and I need millions of names in order to get my name off this list. Remember, one last quote. Nancy Pelosi is quoted as saying, conservative radio is a huge threat and political advantage for Republicans, and we have had to find a way to limit it. I believe that there are forces in America who dealt with the liberal Labor Party in England to ban Michael Savage. Please go to michaelsavage.com, sign the petition. Very important, Beowulf. We've got to hammer this every week.
Savage.
Obama is continuing on his relentless march towards socialized medicine. Make no mistake about it, it's socialized medicine. He will stop at nothing, including exploiting his own family. Listen to him and his wife, the First Lady Michelle.
When our youngest daughter, Sasha, was diagnosed with meningitis when she was just 3 months old, this is one of the scariest moments of my life, and we had to have a spinal tap administered, and she ended up being in the hospital for 3 or 4 days, and it was touch and go. We didn't know whether she'd be permanently affected by it. It was the nurses who walked us through what was happening and made sure that Sasha was okay.
I will never forget the time 8 years ago when Sasha was 4 months that she would not stop crying. And she was not a crier, so we knew something was wrong. So we fortunately were able to take her to our pediatrician that next morning. He examined her and said, something's wrong.
Well, of course you can't help but feel, compassion for a sick child. But to use this story in an attempt to impose government control is really out of the ken of decency. But Obama says it's his political opponents who are being rude.
I think it's important for the media, not to do any media bashing here, to recognize that right now in this 24-hour news cycle, the easiest way to get on CNN or Fox or any of the other stations, MSNBC, is to just say something rude and outrageous. If you're civil and polite and you're sensible and you don't exaggerate the bad things about your opponent, you might maybe get on one of the Sunday morning shows, but you're not gonna be on the loop. Part of what I'd like to see is all of us reward decency and civility in our political discourse.
And at the same time, Obama is telling the rest of the world what to do. Well, nobody is listening to him. Not North Korea, not Iran, not China. Nobody.
The United States is committed to a just, lasting, and comprehensive peace in the Middle East. That includes a settlement of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict that results in two states, Israel and Palestine, in which both the Israeli people and the Palestinian people can live in peace and security and realize their aspirations for a better life for their children. Simply put, it is past time to talk about starting negotiations. It is time to move forward. It is time to show the flexibility and common sense and sense of compromise that's necessary to achieve our goals. Permanent status negotiations must begin and begin soon. And more importantly, we must give those negotiations the opportunity to succeed.
Succeed in what? Destroying Israel? Even Bill Clinton seems to have a better idea of what's going on than Obama.
He is just what he seems to be and nothing more. That is, a guy that if he had these kinds of weapons would be inherently dangerous and crazy enough to put his whole civilization and history at risk by using them.
Maybe you ought to listen to him, Mr. President. Ah, but moving on, we could talk about mussels marinara that I ate in Alioto's on Friday night, and I really loved the meal. I hadn't been there in a very long time. People say, oh, it's Fisherman's Wharf, and I don't go there because it's touristy. There's a reason tourists go there. There's a reason tourists go to Fisherman's Wharf. I actually love it. It's unbelievable. The views are amazing. Again, it was a nice Friday night. I mean, just had a very nice Friday night. I bicycled after the show down the Embarcadero all the way. There's a beach in San Francisco that you shouldn't know about, and I'm not going to tell you about that. It's all at the end of the wharf by the Nautical Museum that's under construction. And at the end of the day, 6:30, the tourists were in the water. The polar bears were in the water. I don't mean the Al Gore's polar bears. I mean the people who swim in cold water. It looks so amazing. I couldn't do it. It was very appealing, I mean, to throw yourself into a 58, 59-degree bay. I couldn't do it. These guys, I don't know how they do it, and they don't get sick from it. Very invigorating. You see a lot of tourists now from Scandinavia. And, you know, you look, you see it. It's interesting. I mean, if you had young children at one point who have grown up, it's like seeing yourself walking there. It doesn't matter what race they are. They could be black. They could be Mexican. They could be Asian. I see myself walking the streets of San Francisco. I know exactly what they're feeling. I know exactly what they're going to do, more or less. I mean, the kids are going to run around, and they're going to have a little dinner on the wharf, then they're going to go to the hotel. You know, it's like just what you did when you were younger. And life goes on. In that sense, it's very renewing for me to go around the streets of a city and to sort of keep my ear to what's going on in the world. That's why I do it. But when I put my ear to what's going on in Washington, when I put my ear to what's going on in our own media, and when I put my ear to what's going on in this country, I come back as though I have put my ear to a horror show itself. And again, I don't want to go down that road all over again. It's almost impossible to do it. I will encourage you to go to michaelsavage.com when you get a moment, or go to me on Facebook, and I'm gaining about 300 Facebook friends a day, which I think is pretty good. Mainly younger people use Facebook. I still don't understand how it works, but it's something I did because eventually I'll build up a Twitter and a Facebook following, and I'll do what Obama was able to do. In other words, if the most left-wing senator in history could become president, then Michael Savage can affect change in the next election. Let's put it to you that way. How's that? Does that work for you? If this audience could stop the Dubai port steal under George Bush, if this audience could stop the appointment of Harriet Myers to the Supreme Court, if this audience could single-handedly turn around illegal aliens from their legalization pathway, then we can do a lot in this country to save it from the radical left that is tearing us apart. And if you want to talk about that, you want to talk about the release of the Lockerbie terrorist by the same Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister of England, who will not take my name off the list of murderers and terrorists. I'll be right back.
Savage.
President Obama recently canceled a missile defense program for Czechoslovakia and Poland, considering that this was done to Czechoslovakia by a liberal socialist government in World War II by Neville Chamberlain. It's shocking. Well, here is Katie McFarland to give her take on this travesty.
Hi, Michael. It's great to be with you again. This is Katie McFarland, and I wanted to talk to you about President Obama's decision to cancel the missile shield, the treaty that we have with Poland and the Czech Republic. I mean, he threw an ally overboard, and frankly, he got snookered by the Russians, and he just moved us closer to a world where the mullahs are going to have the bomb. By canceling the missile shield that we had promised to Poland, he has, in effect, cut that country loose. In fact, cut all of Eastern Europe loose and thrown it to the Russians. And he's done it, ironically and tragically, 70 years to the day of the very brutal Russian invasion of Poland. So for the Poles, the date of September 17th is like September 11th is for us. And they were outraged by Obama's decision. The missile shield was designed to protect all of Eastern Europe from the growing Iranian missile threat, which, as we now know, threatens to go nuclear. It would have put American military personnel in Russians' backyard, because American military would have operated this system. And these are in countries that were until quite recently part of the Russian Empire, and which Russia yearns to control again. So the very thought of this was driving the Russians nuts. It was as if we were rubbing salt in the wound. They had been a great power during the Cold War. They had their Eastern European Empire. They had the Soviet Empire. And when it was over and they were disgraced and dejected and they saw the breakup of that empire, they lost Eastern Europe, including Poland and the Czech Republic, and they saw the collapse of communism. So having that symbolism of American troops in Poland and in the Czech Republic on the very Russian border was the single biggest card we had to play with Russia. They would have paid dearly for us to halt that missile shield, for the symbolism alone.
Well, what was Obama's justification for dropping the shield for these two nations?
Obama justified his decision to drop that missile shield, saying that, well, it didn't work very well anyway, and the Iranian threat wasn't long range, so much as short and medium range, and we can protect against those just as well from seaborne missiles. Well, that is even more reason to have gotten something in trade for dropping the missile shield. We had a bargaining chip that wasn't that valuable to us, apparently, but was very valuable to them. You know, Reagan understood this. When I worked for President Reagan, I saw how brilliantly he maneuvered the Soviet Union into a position where they could only capitulate. He had a defense buildup starting in the 1980s. He went to Europe and repaired our relations with our European allies and NATO. He told the Eastern Europeans, have heart, it is not inevitable that you will be under a Soviet yoke. He told President Gorbachev, tear down this wall. And he then drove the oil prices from a high of $30 a barrel down to about $19 a barrel in a matter of about a year. And it bankrupted Russia because oil was their major export. Once he got Russia in that position, the Soviet Union in that position, he then said, now, let's have a Star Wars program, and in effect, challenge them to another arms race that he knew they couldn't afford. So they had to capitulate. So now compare this to President Obama's decision this week to cancel the missile shield in hopes to get good, you know, a good warm, fuzzy feeling from the Russians in a goodwill gesture. I mean, he was willing to renege on a promise to the Poles, toss an ally overboard, and get nothing for it.
Instead of coming away with nothing for canceling the Missile Defense Shield program, do you think the Obama administration got anything in return?
We could have gotten Russian cooperation to stop Iran's nuclear program. I mean, what could maybe have Obama gotten for this trade? Well, at a minimum, we would have wanted the Russians to delay or halt delivery of the state-of-the-art air defense system, the S-300 air defense system, that they promised to Iran. In fact, Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu went to Moscow recently to plead with Russia to delay delivery. We know that their foreign minister, Lieberman, went. We know that Peres, the president, went. They all went to Moscow asking Moscow to delay delivery of the S-300 because once Iran gets this air defense system, Israel cannot attack Iran's nuclear sites. So that's one thing we might have gotten from Moscow. Another thing that Obama could have maybe gotten was Russian agreement on a gas embargo. Iran imports 40% of its gas, and an embargo would have forced them into the negotiating table very quickly and leave them ready to make a deal because their economy would have started collapsing. But an embargo doesn't work at all if the Russians block it at the UN or the Russians cheat on an established embargo. So we need Russian help with that. We could have gotten that. Now, the third thing. Russia helps Iran enrich uranium. Without Russia, Iran, it would take longer, it will be much more difficult for them to enrich uranium, which is one of the things they need for a nuclear weapon. We could have gotten that, but apparently we didn't get any of those concessions. We canceled the missile shield, and we did it just because we wanted good relations with the Russians so that we would be able to, you know, hit the reset button in the U.S.-Russian relationship. I mean, even the administration came out yesterday and said, well, there was no quid pro quo for this. The Russian foreign minister said this morning that sanctions, any idea of sanctions against Iran would be a serious mistake. And now, on top of all this, we've just learned that the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, a very cautious organization, not giving to jumping at conclusions, there's a secret addendum to its report on Iran's nuclear program. And they have concluded that Iran now has the technology to build a bomb.
What needs to be in place for Iran to build a nuclear bomb based on the assessment of the IAEA that says it is now capable of doing so?
Iran needs three things to have a nuclear weapon. It needs enriched uranium. We know they're doing that, even though they don't let us inspect it. We know they're enriching uranium with Russian help. They need a missile to deliver a nuclear weapon. Well, we've seen that they've tested missiles, and that was what the missile shield was supposed to protect against. And finally, they need a blueprint to pull it all together. Now, this is not insignificant, the blueprint part. And in fact, it's probably the most difficult part of the program. We have no idea how far along they are. Although just last week, the Pakistani Dr. A.Q. Khan, father of Pakistan's nuclear bomb, he admitted that he had sold the blueprint information to Iran. And then today, Michael, we realize that the IAEA has said that Iran probably does have that blueprint. So Iran is on the verge of being a nuclear weapons power. And what does Obama do? He cancels the shield. And he does so without enlisting Russian help. I mean, not only has Obama thrown an ally overboard, he's been snookered by the Russians. And we have just moved the world closer to a place where the mad mullahs are going to have the bomb. I mean, I'm very worried that President Obama is now in a mode where he goes around the world and apologizes for what we've done, and now he has given up one of our greatest abilities to get Soviet cooperation to stop Iran, and he's given it up without anything in return. So it's something that has gotten me and a lot of people in the national security community very concerned. We can't believe that he's given this up without getting something for it. Michael, it's been great to be with you yet again, and this is KT McFarland, and it is over to you and the Savage Nation.
Unbelievable, KT. Thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
In which Obama has appointed his special advisors, or czars, is really a bit, it's frightening. These advisors have no oversight. They answer only to the tyrant himself, and apparently have not been properly vetted. We all heard about the former Green Job czar, Van Jones. Joining us today is Scott Wheeler, whose new book is entitled Shadow Government, What Obama Doesn't Want You to Know About His Czars. It gives us the background on 35 of these czars. Scott Wheeler, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Hey, great to be with you again, Michael. As everyone saw from the Van Jones matter, Obama wasn't vetting any of his czars, and so we thought we better vet them for him. And so we decided to put them in a book form and just tell people who these people are, where they come from. There is a lot of fresh information in this book, too, that we did from personal research and interviews, including the authors, Peter Leitner and myself. We knew some of these people, and we had had interactions with them before, and so we knew where they were coming from. And so there's a lot of very delicate personal information about these guys that hasn't been made public yet.
The use of special advisors is not new, but Obama's czars are different. How so?
Well, the interesting thing about Obama's czars, he has 42 slots for czars. He at one point had 35 filled, and then he dropped to, and so now he has 33 in place currently. But most of them are without Senate confirmation, and that's the difference. George W. Bush actually had more czars than anybody until Obama. The other presidents had few. Did not use them very often, but they were almost always Senate confirmed and subject to congressional oversight, which is a pretty big deal. In the case of Obama, most of his are not Senate confirmed and do not have to submit to congressional oversight, something that should make Congress very angry, but they are not. For some reason, they're allowing a super executive branch to take over more and more of their territory. Now, the Democrats did not go along with this back in the Bush years. When Bush wanted to appoint a czar to oversee foreign aid expenditures, Vice President Biden, who was then Senator Biden, objected strongly, and his objection was, according to him, that it would put that position further away from congressional oversight, and for that reason it was bad for the country, he said. Then he becomes part of an administration that has just gone berserk with appointing people who are not accountable to the people's representatives in Congress. And that is mind-boggling, and you can conclude that they did it intentionally this way. And when you look at what happened with Van Jones, you can sort of see why. They don't obviously they know these guys could not stand up to congressional scrutiny. And if they were set up for confirmation and these things came out about them, it would make it very difficult for any Democrat to vote to confirm them. And so this needs more investigation, and that was the reason we wrote the book, was to point out the fact that these people who are operating off the books in most cases are absolutely unacceptable to be in charge of billions of dollars of the people's money.
We have talked about the regulatory czar and his extreme leftist policies, Cass Sunstein. What do you know about Sunstein?
Well, Sunstein has become famous for many reasons, some of his extreme views, including his belief that animals should be allowed to sue humans. And that's one of the more radical things that he has said. But he has also in favor of a fairness doctrine for the Internet, which, of course, as you know, the fairness doctrine, which originally applied to broadcast radio and television stations, was intended to create balance. Sunstein had advocated balance on the Internet. How you achieve that is quite astounding. But this would certainly raise questions about what their intent is for controlling the Internet, and also not only controlling the Internet, but censoring it and not allowing people to have a free expression of ideas. Sunstein also wrote a book called The Second Bill of Rights, FDR's Unfinished Revolution and Why We Need It More Than Ever. And his fascination with socialism was accentuated in this book. One quote from that book was, "My major aim in this book is to uncover an important but neglected part of America's heritage, the idea of a second Bill of Rights. In brief, the second Bill of Rights protect both opportunity and security by creating rights to employment, adequate food and clothing, decent shelter, education, recreation, and medical care." This is an astounding thing. Cass Sunstein advocates that you have a right to a job, a right to food and clothing, a right to shelter, education, a right to recreation, as well as medical care. This really takes a dramatic turn to the first Bill of Rights in the Constitution, and takes away the access to equal opportunity and turns it into an equality of outcome, which, as we all know, goes directly to socialism and perhaps in the case of Sunstein, even right to Stalinism.
Van Jones and Sunstein are not the only radical types appointed here. Tell us a little about Carol Browner, the energy czar.
Well, Browner was the director of the EPA in the Bill Clinton administration, and we know that she was at that time very radical and aggressive in putting in legislation that would hamper free enterprise and industry in this country. And she has a long environmental record, but she's also advocated that you should ban offshore drilling. She has pushed the EPA, the authority to regulate carbon emissions under the EPA, give them the authority to regulate carbon emissions. And also, she's a champion of the cap and trade, or what we call cap and tax legislation, that would be disastrous for the U.S. economy. She also, as recently as December of last year, was listed as a commissioner in Socialist International, the worldwide organization of social democratic, socialist, and labor parties. It's been harshly critical of the United States in the past. She was one of 14 official leaders of this umbrella socialist organization's so-called Commission for a Sustainable World Society, a nice-sounding name for a sinister goal of establishing a shadow world government with an agenda of controlling the world's wealthiest economies under the pseudo-scientific pretext of global warming. And that's, you know, so much of this is indicative of where we have seen the environmental movement for a long time, and that is really it's about controlling the economy through the so-called, green approach, and it's about the environment, it's about global warming, and it's about climate change. But the reality is they're after the economy, and that's what they want to get their hands on.
Well, where does it go from here?
Well, I think as more and more people wake up and become informed, and by reading books such as this and listening to your radio show, they will react as they have reacted. They've taken to the streets. They've made government known. They've elected representatives know about their dislike for the direction of the country. And so I think that's one of the things people are doing and becoming more informed. And we have an election next year. And I think the people being informed when they go to the polls is going to do great damage in undermining this administration's attempt to take control of the largest part of the economy.
Where can we find your book?
The best way to get the book right now is to go to GOPTrust.com. GOPTrust.com. You can get an advanced copy, and it will be rushed out to you directly.
Scott Wheeler, thanks again for being on The Savage Nation.
Hey, it's great to be with you again, Michael.
This is The Savage Nation. Don't knock tripe. I mean, I had it in my friend's Basque restaurant. It was actually quite good. I wanted to try it as an appetizer because every ethnic cuisine has an intestinal dish. This was a cow stomach. All right, whatever. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad at all. Tripa in Italian, the Jewish people call it stuffed kishka or stuffed derma. Every ethnic group ate every part of the animal. That's how it was. The brains, my mother, rest her soul, ate brains. That's why she was smart to age 88. We're on a low-fat diet, and everything low-fat, low this, and the guys are running, looking at the watch. They're lean. They dropped it at 36, running and looking, looking and running and running and looking. The grandfather has a paunch, and he's kicking around saying, what happened to the grandson? Why is he pushing himself so hard? I don't say that. There's a middle ground somewhere. This country doesn't understand the middle of anything. It's an extremist nation in every regard. First, we bounce from one side. Now we bounce to the far left, radical, off-the-cliff Obama administration, who doesn't represent at all the American people, doesn't even represent liberals. Obama is not a liberal. He's a radical. Don't you understand a difference? By the way, we just got a report banned in Britain. The sales are already going through the roof. I want to, look, this thrills me. This is my getting even. This is my getting even with Britain. This is my getting even with the government that's trying to suppress free speech in this country. This is my getting even with the Publishers Row. This is, believe me, giving me, you say, where do I get my strength to go on from? I don't know. Maybe this is one of the places.
Savage.